Streaming live around the world, this is Paper Cuts with Brad and Jay.
I'm the one you love. I'm Jay. Thanks so much for stopping by. Over there's Brad. It's his show.
That's why I'm the host, and we just love Jay.
Now you know it's all natural. I mean, you know, nothing's rehearsed, right?
No, absolutely nothing is rehearsed on this show.
God, you just suck life out of here. This feels like
you've got a lot grayer since we started this.
I have.
It's a star-studded event with Laurel Hightower, Red Legault, and the legendary Ronald Kelly.
We are live.
I'm totally starstruck right now. Somebody we've not talked to for a while. I mean, Ronald, it's been a few years, 5-6 years since we've had him on. Red was just on around Christmas, wasn't she? I can't remember.
Somewhere last year, yeah.
Yeah, and then Laurel, I mean, we bump into her at the bar all the time. So
that's the bar or the gym are the only place
it
that I am.
It is a star-studded event. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another exciting episode, rock on, of Paper Cuts. And yeah, I'm a little starstruck. Brad, are you starstruck? Because we have legends in the house this evening.
I'm always Star Trek Day all the time.
I mean, when you're on here with me, you are.
Other than you,
that.
Yeah.
But Red Legault, Laurel Hightower, and Ronald Kelly joining us this evening, and we're gonna do some talking about this number here, and probably some other things because you know we go off the rails a lot. So we're going to talk about this, and then see just how far off that we go. How's everybody doing tonight?
Doing good.
All right. A little bit short of sleep, so I can't be held responsible for anything I say.
Laurel, I don't think it would matter if you had a full 8 hours of sleep. It wouldn't matter.
You know what? Like, I'd be insulted, but it's so fucking true.
Are we all have our drinks? Is that water? What do you have, Laurel?
Yes, I have not. I didn't even have a drink the whole time at Ghoulish. I just want you to know.
Really?
The whole time, not one.
I'm splashing whiskey all over my hand here. Didn't realize it, but all
right. You're an amateur, Jay.
I am, apparently.
Candace.
Hey, Candace.
What's everybody normally doing on Friday night besides talking to two dopes for microphones? Well, Laurel is usually trying to get her kid to sleep. I know that, right?
Yeah, but this time tonight, because we're doing this.
There's my daughter.
Oh, awesome. Hi, McKenna.
The pressure's on us now. Ronald, it's only, what, 7 o'clock there for you, right? Ronald, yeah.
I got to behave myself, you know.
Okay.
You know, also, due to you know, out of respect to my two co-authors, I will not be saying boobs or nipples on tonight.
Do we have like a counter?
That's all.
Yeah. Should we have like a counter on screen here?
You know, I got to say that would never have occurred to me. And now I'm wondering if there's some reference I've missed where there was some Ron Kelly Goes Wild episode of Paper Cuts.
I believe it was, my last appearance. We kind of went off the rails kind of a little bit.
I blame Jay like immediately without knowing the context.
Blame Ron was going towards the nipples. Yeah. Yeah.
He was getting close to retirement and he was just letting it all go. He didn't care anymore. He was about to retire.
This episode of Nipple Talk brought to you by Boobs R Us. We put a counter up there, Brad, so we can keep track every time this goes around.
McKenna is having life regrets right now.
Yeah. Probably hiding under her pillow or something like that.
Yeah.
Not my dad.
Hi, Shirley.
So Shirley was here last time for Red's episode.
Since last time we talked, how's everybody been? Good? Ronald, it's been a long time. How's retirement treating you, by the way?
Yeah.
Very busy. not necessarily writing, but just, you know, out doing errands and just, I guess, you know, binging stuff and stuff like that. You know? not binging alcohol, but, you know, binging. You know, like
he's just tilting the bottle back.
We're on the backbone. It's moonshine. Every one of us.
Yeah. I could get into that. I could brew me some, you know.
Get some apple pie moonshine brought by a guy named Lebo to a party out in the back of somebody's farm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Now that's a retirement.
That, yeah.
Something to look forward to. What are you binging? What are you, shows on what, Netflix or something, or?
Oh, well, you know, actually, I've just kind of delved into my DVD collection, you know. And, been going to like thrift stores and McKay's down here in Tennessee and everything. And
I remember McKay's.
Yeah, buying some old movies and stuff like that, horror movies, westerns and stuff like that. And
cool,
just enjoying myself, you know.
Nice.
Don't have to get up at 3:30 in the morning and go to work.
Oh, God.
That's always great.
I'm looking forward to when I don't have to do that anymore. But
do you actually have to do that now, though, Jay? Like, I've always kind of questioned that.
I don't think he does.
I don't either.
Well,
no.
That's going to be changed. I got a different position, and that's going to be changing. Still, though, I mean, with I'm in a house of all females, so if I want to get into a bathroom before I go to... I have to, chisel out like a half hour around 3:30 in the morning to actually get into the bathroom. So,
look,
enough about
McKenna saying he's been binging Instagrams when he's been binging.
Called out.
She's ratting you out.
And TikTok, you know, a little bit. You know, I'm not a big TikTok fanatic, but.
You're not doing like dance videos and stuff. And
no, not like Triana. I'm not dancing around like he.
No,
Charlie's talking about Western horrors. Ronald Kelly's got a horror Western series.
Yeah,
he's been writing.
Actually, we got it. It's coming out in a few days. The book number three is coming out.
Oh wow!
Nice.
It's
firing on all cylinders.
Man-Eaters, Mummies, and Murderous Maniacs.
Oh, my God. Yes. I love that title.
Perfect.
The alliteration's great.
So,
is that just going to be a trilogy, or is it going to keep going?
No, it's going to be... Well, it's going to be five.
Okay. So
that's how I planned it, yeah. I kind of put three different monsters in each book, you know, so... Mm-hmm. I can't stretch it out too far. I'll be getting into Bigfoot and aliens and...
Oh, Hunter Shea will he'll get mad.
He'll love that.
No, I don't want to step on Hunter's toes.
So that's what you've been writing since you can sleep until 4:30 now.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Red, what have you been up to since last time we spoke?
Oh, you know. I had a new book come out. In Excess of Dark just came out last week.
Which is fantastic. Yes,
it was. I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, it's just been... Right, I've been really, really slow at my edits for the next book. Everything is just going in slow motion right now. So I'm living in a different realm. But yeah, I had a book come out and I'm doing edits and that's about it.
Nice. Nice. Laurel, what have you been doing since we've... I don't remember last time we spoke.
Laurel's up here all the time. I don't know.
I know. We lose track. We lose track.
I think you're on last with Megan, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I don't know. I don't know what I ate for breakfast. I came back from Ghoulish Book Fair. I was in San Antonio last weekend for Ghoulish, which is always just an absolute blast. It was super fun. Right. And... Scare Last
got a new,
couple weeks before that. So
you've got a novella coming out sometime soon, right?
Yeah, it's actually a novel. This one's actually
a novel. Okay.
Yeah. It's a little bit short, it's about 60,000 words. It started out as a novella, but after edits
ballooned up.
Got a little chunkier.
What's that one called again?
It's called The Day of the Door. I don't have a copy to show you because Max was gonna save one for me, but of the two boxes that he had to sell at Ghoulish, one went to Oregon. So we sold out of those pretty quickly, but I signed all my pre-orders. I hid in my hotel room for actually a significant chunk of Ghoulish signing pre-orders and being awkward. So it was fun. Nice. But yeah, that's coming out in April.
All the pre-orders got a signed copy.
They did. And if you'll notice, it gets progressively shakier and weirder looking. Oh, and it's not, like I said, I didn't have a thing to drink, but there were grackles. Okay. There were these grackles at the hotel and like none of us slept. So like by the last night, I'm like shakily trying to sign on like, you know, a cumulative like 6 hours of sleep for three nights. So that's how you know it's the real deal.
The real sick. It's not fake. Yeah. It's all crooked and ghetto looking.
So all three of you have all these projects you're working on. How and when and where and why did you find time for this? I don't know. I got a glare on it.
Here, let me zoom in on you, Jason.
The Devil's Backbone. This is part of the
I have an answer to that.
Dark Tide series from Crystal Lake.
Because Ron asked me to.
That was actually going to be my answer too. Yes.
So when a legend asks, you just do it.
Yes.
No question asked.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I'll give you a little background if you want me to.
Sure.
Yeah.
Joe Meinhardt contacted me in 2022. I think it was August 2022, and asked me if I wanted to put together a Dark Tide book. And that was a no-brainer. I said, I'll do it. And he said, well, come up with a theme and find you a couple of fellow writers that, you think would do very well with this. And so I picked Appalachian Horror and and kind of came up with this idea of like a fictitious section of Appalachia that it's called the Devil's Backbone.
Mm-hmm.
And I contacted Laurel and James Newman, and James wanted to do it, but he had some problems with his job and couldn't find time to really get into it. So the next one that came to mine and Laurel's mind was Red. So, we asked Red to come in, and then I guess over the last year, we've been working on this, back and forth. So I think it's really turned out really great. I mean, we've gotten some great feedback on it.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love the theme that it's Appalachian Horror, because you don't see too much of that.
No.
Yeah. So for Laurel and Red, did you make these stories from scratch, or were these some stories you had sitting in the bank just waiting to find the right spot for them?
You gonna go?
Sure.
Jay, did you read this book, Jay? No, did you read it at all?
No, we wrote these specifically for.
I'm doing book. This for the audience who's not read the book, Brad.
Sure, Jay.
Jeez. I can recite almost every word.
Okay.
All right, so do it.
No. Well, let me get a few more drinks here. I'm still splashing on me. I don't know what's going on here.
No, it was not. I think we all wrote our stories specifically for this project. These were not trunk stories by any means, because we had to, because they were set in a very specific world, which is along this fictional mountain range.
Yeah, that's I had been wanting to write something about bourbon witches for a little bit, and so I kind of figured.
That's new.
Right. I never write about bourbon, and I'm never at all in reference to it. It's actually gotten kind of funny though, because I feel like people think I drink a lot more than I do. It's like if you go to a con expecting me to be like raging at the bar, no.
We haven't contributed to that with the jokes or anything, have we?
Oh, I don't care. It's fine. It works for me. But I sort of like, I don't think about it. And then sometimes I like come up against it at like a public function, and it's like being like Kevin Smith, where people are like offering him weed all the time, and he's like, for God's sake, like.
Although you may find me raging at the bar.
You know what? Can we rage like sitting down?
Yeah, like late 9 p.m. so that I can go to sleep.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah. It's a very early rager.
Yes,
the sun's still up.
when people start having concerts at like 7:30 at night, to where I can like be back in bed at like 9, then I'll start seeing live shows again. That's where I'm at.
It's like, can we sit down at this concert? I don't want to stand up for 3 hours, please.
Oh God, no, I wouldn't. Yeah, no.
Can we get a table and drinks and a server?
Yeah,
I purposely buy seats so I can sit down now instead of sitting the standing room only. I'm like, no.
Yeah, I want to wear slippers. Yeah. And maybe a snuggie. Or
and I'll buy the seat next to me too, so I'm not sitting all cramped with strangers. God,
yeah.
Need some elbow room, so you can stretch out.
Yeah, anyway, we're lots of fun at party.
I'll be dozing off during slow song.
So I wanted to ask, was there much collaboration? I know the stories are all set in different time periods in different states, and they're doing their own thing, but did y'all collaborate much at all with the stories for each other?
I don't believe so. I believe we just kind of, the ground rules were kind of laid out that, you know, it was just going to be in the shared universe. Mm-hmm. And I think I wrote my story first, which was set in 1880. And then Laurel came in and wanted to, like, do around Prohibition, you know, time and all that. So it almost skipped 50 years between the three stories, because Red's takes place during Vietnam War in the 1970s. So it just kind of worked out like that. I don't think we really had a concrete plan of how we were going to map out what time periods and what our stories were going to be like.
Yeah. I think we did come up with sort of like a very minimal kind of legend or something, so that we weren't, you know, that one of us didn't have like zombies and, you know, the other one had like the Loch Ness monster or something. We wanted to make sure that we had kind of a shared, but I mean, we did, you know, just sort of allow for expansion as far as like, hey, we're talking about sort of a magical kind of scenario. We're talking about a certain amount of supernatural, and take that however you want, you know, kind of thing. And I think that ended up well. We stayed in contact pretty well, I think, on it, though, as far as like sharing, you know, what we thought we were going to do. And I definitely sent a couple of SOS, I hate this, please tell me what to do kind of thing. So they probably saw mine more often than theirs. But
yeah, and we read each other's stories too. And so we could go back and make sure we put in little nuggets of connectivity between the stories too. There was a little collaboration, but not, it wasn't like a 12-hour sit-down meeting.
No. Just emails back and forth.
Yeah.
I think like the different time periods work, because it gets newer as it goes along, the way you have it set up in the book. If you would have had all three around 1800s, you know, okay, same story, different chapter, basically, but the way you have different time periods really works, so.
Yeah, which I think was good for, because I feel like our authorial voices blended really well. It doesn't, you know, it didn't seem to me jarring or anything reading through it, you know, from cover to cover. But it did allow for, I mean, obviously there's a lot of difference there in how we write. So it allowed for that sort of, you know, window between them, which I think was helpful.
Right. Right. But each one's dark in its own way. I mean, they like for Ronald's, for instance, like there's some dark black magic in there that just, you know, scary, you know. And then Laurel, yours has got, you know, the darkness of people. The way I was taking it in, like, you know, the dark side of people, you know, just you know, their mean side. It's just like, man, I know some people like that, you know. So yeah.
I believe there was a thread of cosmic horror throughout, because I did a little bit in mine, and I know Red, you know, got into it quite a bit. And,
whoops, so. I tend to do that sometimes.
So for Laurel and Red, was, because I feel like y'all don't write much like Appalachian stuff, at least that I've read, was this sort of getting out of your comfort zone to write a story set in kind of this area, this time frame and stuff, for it to be like an Appalachian horror story, and just instead of just being in Kentucky or Virginia?
For me it was, and I mean, you're a Kentuckian too, Brad. You know, there's like a big difference between, like, it's like, you know, it's like, oh, you're the, you know, with our law firm too, like, I'm in central Kentucky, and it'll be like, well, you know, them big city lawyers, like, and you know, there's like, so I'm always like a little bit hesitant about trying to be like, okay, I'm sorry, I'm not actually like that Kentucky. You know, but there's a part of me that's always like terrified to get it wrong, you know, because it's like, I am Kentuckian. I love being from Kentucky, and I love a lot of parts of Kentucky, but also like, I don't live a certain type of life that I feel like I can, you know, so it was interesting in this to sort of like try to delve into it and yeah, kind of write from that, write a little less from what I know, like on a day-to-day basis. I'm probably going to get my Kentucky card pulled the first time.
Lexington and Louisville are a whole lot different than like Corbin and Manchester. They're completely different worlds.
Yeah. They really are. Yeah.
Oh, are there different cities in Kentucky?
No, it's just one big city.
I just thought it was just one big Kentucky.
It's just one neighborhood. We don't have cities. It's just one neighborhood. It's
one neighborhood, and we got one pair of shoes between us.
You got like one street light, right?
And yeah.
Me and Laurel, we're using the same internet cord right now. She's like over there about 100 feet.
Actually a tin can.
Yeah. I was going to say. Yeah, tin can's connected.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Red, what about you, Red? Was it sort of out of your comfort zone to write an Appalachian kind of story?
I didn't feel uncomfortable writing it, but when I was approached about the project, I was asked because I also live in Virginia. So Laurel's story is from set in Kentucky, and Ron's is set in Tennessee, and mine is set in Virginia, which is where the mountain range runs. And so I said yes, that I'd do it, but I'm not from the mountains. Like, I go to the mountains, but yeah. I live coastal Virginia, which is, you know, it's beach.
A lot of sand.
I am beach. But I love the mountains. I love hiking. I love camping. And I try to go every year. And so I feel very home at the mountains. Mm-hmm. And so it didn't feel uncomfortable for me to write Appalachian horror, but I didn't want to get it wrong either, because I know it's its own little subgenre. And so I didn't want to screw it up. So that part made me a little uncomfortable, because I haven't read a ton of Appalachian horror to really know what it was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So I guess it did make me a little nervous, just making sure I got the subgenre right.
Yeah, and we're not trying to make you blush, Ron, but like part of it is like, you know, we're writing with like the master of Appalachian horror. So like there's part of it that's like, all right, I really don't want to get this wrong.
Ron read it. It's like, no, this is completely wrong. You don't fix this.
If he had said that, I would have been like, yes, sir. I will make these changes. No, actually you give me such good notes. It was very like, not very many, but he was just like, you might want to actually mention the backbone at some juncture in this book. And I'm like, for real, got that many words in and didn't say it once. Okay. Yes. I will do that.
that's going to be the sequel, which by the way, Laurel, I noticed your story is longer than both of Red's and Ronald's. How
for
that
which
happened?
I apologize.
It turned out great. Mine was the shortest one, and I'm kind of like a story is as long as it needs to be. And that was as long. I mean, it was long enough, and it did what it set out to do. So,
yeah.
I love that term. It's as long as it needs to be.
But
I wish more people knew that.
Are you looking at me, Jay?
No. Yours was a good link. I've read some that are like 300 or 400 pages. Well, you know, I've read one or two that are 300 or 400 pages. Oh, this could have been half this.
He keeps backpedaling because he knows like former guests are gonna be like, is it mine? Are you kidding me?
Like, no, said, no.
You wouldn't know her. She's from Canada. Don't worry about it.
He said a bunch.
Oh, really?
He doesn't read a bunch of 300 page books. He doesn't have that long of an attention span. So he's read like two, and they were too long for him.
Yeah. And those took like 6 months. So, yeah.
But I did like how each story was set in a different state. So you got a little bit, you know, even though they felt familiar and a bit the same, since it's Appalachian, they had their own unique, you know, spin on it. When being in Virginia, Tennessee, and Kentucky, I like that a lot. Did you all plan that out? That, you know, each person's going to write from the state that they're in, or did just? You know,
when I came up with the original idea, it was going to be Kentucky, Tennessee, North Carolina. But since James had to drop out, you know, I mean, Virginia was right there, the bottom tip of Virginia was right there. So I mean, it just worked out, you know, perfect.
Just slip that tip right in.
Yeah.
Red said that.
What's the boobs and nipple count? What are we up to?
Well, I think Red just took it up to like 15.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like bonus points right there. That's
sorry, right. Now I'm blushing.
Yeah. I don't feel so bad anymore. You know?
No, I'm at like, in case you aren't aware, Red, I am genuinely impressed. Just and I'm
Tim.
Yeah. Red, I'm interested in the yours was all about Tiffany.
She knew Red would be
there.
One.
There was a side bet going on. I think Tiff won. So the Devil's Bathtub. what's your experience? Did you have you ever seen one of those? Did you experience that in the mountains? I only bring that up because we have one here in Ohio too. That I got pictures of Brad wants to show if these are anything like what you've seen or experienced. See.
It is exactly the way I experienced it when I looked it up online.
Okay. So,
but we do have one here in Virginia.
Okay.
And it's right about that area in the far western tip of Virginia. My experience with it is articles that I've read about it.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Let's see. So what's that? What'd you say it looked like?
So this is from, yeah, it's like the way the water goes down. It's like a natural.
Oh, that's a terrible photo. Oh, wait, is that the one in Ohio?
Yeah, so.
Virginia one's gorgeous.
It's also Ohio. It is gorgeous. So.
The Ohio one is like a toilet bowl because
it is. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
You just call Ohio a toilet bowl. All right.
Most people do, Jay. Most people do.
Almost hey, everyone in Kentucky for sure.
Just so you know, it flows downhill to Kentucky. So
you knew instantly. She's like, that's not Virginia.
Your toilet's just flush on the surface of the land. That's good. That makes sense.
All the pipes just go down south. So
you haven't discovered sewage pipes. That's all right. I hope you catch up, man.
A couple more years. They're doing construction.
Have you been to the one in Ohio?
Oh yeah, yeah, we go regularly. Hocking Hills, Ohio. There's a trail, a path called Old Man's Cave. It's like a 5 mile hike through the Hocking Hills of Ohio, and that's right in the middle of it. So, yeah.
I thought there was just the one. I thought that was like the one in Virginia. I didn't know there were like multiple.
Well, I mean, that's why when I was reading her story, like, I was like, wait a second. Like, I know it's taking place in Virginia. I was like, is there one in Virginia or in the mountains? Or must be all over
now the place. Now I want to know what makes it a devil's bathtub. Is it just like an aesthetics thing? Or is it like stalactite versus stalagmite or something?
I mean, I think it's like just the natural method in which the water doesn't stop. It's just a natural flow going down. I'm not sure.
That's the way it is in Virginia. In Virginia, I think it's just a pool, a water hole.
Maybe somebody can do some research in the chat while we're speculating about it. Maybe somebody can actually look it up.
The one in Ohio is the one like a toilet, Jay. Not the one in Virginia.
It's on a constant flush, and the handle stuck.
So, Red, was there something about that you wanted to incorporate that into your story? Just because it was a cool landscape feature? Or?
Yeah, it was just a really cool feature. So I was looking at that area of the map where this fictional mountain range would have run. And I wanted to play in some of the natural features of that area while also keeping it kind of vaguely fictional. and I found the Devil's Bathtub. And I have heard of it before, but I didn't know it was located there. And it's beautiful, and I needed it in the story.
You came up with that like really quick. I feel like I seem to remember that like,
oh, my story idea, yeah.
but I seem to remember that like we messaged you, and then like pretty quickly you shot back with a story idea, and it involved the Devil's Bathtub. So that was it has been like a year and a half or something, so I could be wrong, but I seem to remember that being pretty fast.
It was pretty fast, and I don't normally come up with ideas that quickly. Normally I need a good month to come up with an idea. Well, not normally, but sometimes I need a good month, and then sometimes it comes quickly. It just depends on, I don't know, how my brain cells are connecting. But they were working that day.
Laura, what about you? How did you come up with bourbon witches? I mean, obviously, but
just existence.
It
is kind of silly. I was watching, I really need to look up the name of that movie. It's like Bloody Sunday or something. It's like an older like witch movie. And it was mostly just like puns in my head. It was like they were just talking about like some mask they were gonna put on her or something. And I was changing it to cask. And I don't know. I just like it just... mostly a lot of bourbon puns, honestly, but also to an extent, like I loved the idea that Run had, you know, initially of this, of sort of the magic of this backbone, of this sort of, you know, somewhat undefined kind of almost earth magic to it. And I'm fascinated by the idea of the supernatural and just those sorts of energies being, they're essentially neutral. They're, they just, like so many things, they have to do with what, who's wielding them and how. You know, so I got interested in the idea of using it as sort of like a balance thing, you know, and the idea, of course, the idea of witches and the way that certain things get blamed on them. You know, I was watching the autopsy of Jane Doe as well. And I really, I loved the, you know, the idea of this, this sort of blame, this punishment being taken out on the flesh of women, and then the way that got like kind of turned around on it. So yeah, just I mean, basically it was just initially sort of, you know, I have like a lot of us, I have these little notebooks with all these like one line ideas, you know, some of which make absolutely no sense. but you know, one of them was just like a bunch of like kind of witchy bourbon puns. You know, got an opportunity to use it. So that was,
I read somewhere that the next season of American Horror Story is going to be called Bourbon Witches.
But... Bourbon Witches.
Well, they will be hearing from my attorneys. Nice. On Monday.
you finally made it big time. So.
Yeah, I get really stolen liked... from by the greats.
I really liked yours though, because yours felt very, you know, the core of Appalachia, like people coming in and stealing from the earth. Is it like the coal mines and all that stuff? So that felt very, yeah, you know, on par for an Appalachian type story like that.
Yeah, and it I mean, kind of now that we're talking about it too, I guess there were a few things that I, you know, I work for lawyers, and my first the first team that I worked for, which you the first team that I worked for was the environmental team. And so, yeah, you know, again, and it's Eastern Kentucky, I've got a certain amount of knowledge of coal mines and, you know, mineral rights and that sort of thing. But I also, when I was in high school, was in a play based on the Ballad of Barbara Allen. And I don't know if anyone's familiar with that, but basically the premise of it is, you know, in this sort of era, a coal man, you know, a mineral man comes in and waves a bunch of money and buys people's mineral rights. And it, you know, of course they dig up their land and it completely destroys it. And, it's just, I don't know. It's an interesting kind of concept of it, of our relation to the land and how we treat it and what you can really own and what it's likely to do to you if you overstep your bounds.
Yeah. Ron, for you, I love the Netherwild. That's such a cool thing. Where'd you come up with that at?
Tell us about Bowden.
Is the Netherwild in any of your other stuff, or is that singular to just a story?
That's just singular. Just something that came out of my mind. It was kind of the whole idea came. My grandmother used to tell me stories when I was a kid about kids that went missing in the woods and stuff like that, and how a lot of superstitious people thought that, you know, haints and creatures had gotten them. And I got this idea of what it, you know, if there was actually one and it was taking the mountain's children, you know, for some reason, for maybe it was lonely or something. And it wanted, you know, children of its own or something like that. And so I thought, well, you know, it would need a, you know, a realm of itself, which this creature in this story, you know, is sort of, you know, connected to cosmic, you know, cosmic places and stuff like that. So, and my main character, Uriah Coldcreek, is a seventh son. And I actually met a seventh son one time, when I first got married, my nephew had thrush in his mouth. And so we went up in the hills and there was a old man sitting on a porch, and we took my nephew up there and we didn't even say anything. I mean, there was not a word spoken. We just handed, my wife's grandmother went with us, and we handed the baby to him, and he breathed into his mouth five times, and the next morning the thrush was gone. So,
wow.
So that always stuck with me, as you know, there's things that we, you know, that may be true that we don't actually understand, you know, and magic like that. But so, you know, I wanted to write a quest story, you know how I love quest stories, mm-hmm. like fear. Yeah. And all that. Right. But I wanted to write one where, you know, the father and this seventh son was on this quest to find the two missing children. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's how mine came about.
Yeah. I mean, that's what really cool. stuck out a lot, because not only was he trying to find his kids, but I felt some soul searching, because it was a long journey, you know, getting in touch with different parts of the being while they're looking for the kids. So there's definitely like a journey in there for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God, I wish we'd had one of those when Tiny was a baby, like the number of things. I'd be like, how do you feel about diaper rash? Cause my God, like,
yeah. Breathe seven times on the diaper rash.
At a certain point of lack of sleep, it's like, what can you do for reflux? I will give you anything, including this child.
And Ron, for those that don't know, a seventh son is the seventh son of a seventh son, right?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, who's never seen his father. Yeah, the seventh son of a seventh son that's never seen their father. So
that's going to be so rare. That's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
That makes me wonder, like, do people, like, if you're a seventh son and you end up with a seventh son, do you like feel this obligation?
Don't look at me.
I know, like, yeah. You're just like, oh no.
Go out.
Right, well, it's been nice, guys. I'm out.
You go out for milk and bread and they'll come back.
You never come back. Yeah. Still getting milk 20 years later.
So did any of you all pull from like any like tidbits of folklore or anything like in your respective states, like to inform your story at all? Or did y'all just kind of just make everything? I mean, Ron, you kind of did with the talking about the seventh son. Did Laurel or Red, did y'all pull any kind of folklore stuff into your stories at all?
Not intentionally. Like, I can't think of anything specific, you know, other than, I guess, just, I mean, general moonshine sort of like atmosphere kind of scenario. I come from a family of moonshiners, so just what I know about that and that kind of thing, but not, and I don't want to say like no, because I have this feeling there's some, you know, like cultural unconscious Kentucky thing that I utilize that someone will pop up.
There's no goat man or something.
Yeah, someone will pop up and be like, haha, you lie.
You're a Kentuckian, you got it wrong. Yeah.
I'll put that on a t-shirt.
Red, what about you? Because you have a cool, I don't want to say too much about it. You have a cool, the Gatherer is a cool, interesting creature. Is that from anything, or is that just completely from your imagination?
It's, you know, it's not from anything. I mean, I'd like to say it's just from my imagination, but I think I pulled from a lot of other material, a lot of influences, but not from any specific Virginia folklore that I know of. Mm-hmm. I've lived in Virginia just over a decade, so I'm not too knowledgeable of all the folklore up and down the mountains. I know a little bit of like some of the ghost stories locally here on the coast, but no, I didn't really add any known folklore to my story.
Todd's bringing Tennessee moonshine to AuthorCon, just so everyone's aware.
Nice.
What and see, CS Dremerson has a comment and a question. I just finished A Foot in the Netherwild. It was awesome. I love Ronald Kelly's short story collections. I can't wait to buy one of his novels. Which should I read first? There's a lot to choose from.
I was going
to
say, should everybody say Fear?
Fear is kind of like your Stephen King's It is Ronald Kelly's Fear.
Yeah, you know, Fear just kind of defines me as an author. I mean, I really think it was my best point as a writer. You know, it's just, it hit us at a certain time and all the characters were fully evolved in my mind and the dialogue just flowed. And it was one of those rare instances where a book just practically wrote itself. And mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I'm about to start on Fear Eternal, the sequel. So we'll see how that turns out. But I think it's gonna be a tearjerker, just like the first one. You know, so.
Nice.
It's always good when you get a good tearjerker. Yeah, I feel like if you can, as an author, make the reader cry, you've done your job. If you can elicit that emotion in them, whether that connected to the characters,
we're not
going to
get into a crying conversation like last week.
We are. I'm going to cry. No. Did we cry? Well, we did talk about crying last week, didn't we?
About crying, and then you brought up the dog videos and all that stuff.
I did not. That was all Mark Taus did that.
No, I was going to say, was all those dogs reuniting with like soldiers and stuff?
I was talking about the families reuniting with their soldiers. Yeah.
I've always wanted to just on a random day have my husband come home in uniform and just videotape the way the dog reacts on just him being away at work and coming home, because it would look exactly the same as if he was away for like a year. He just dances around and jumps. So some of those videos might be fake.
Yeah. There just happens to always be a camera there.
Yeah,
you know, you put a good enough soundtrack to it. I'm a sucker anyway. So
cue that Sarah McLachlan song.
I mean, you could easily turn that into a horror show or movie or video or something if you change the music to something like
It Follows,
heavy, something really heavy.
Yeah. So. And yeah. Timmy Lost Cunningham is like the biggest Ronald Kelly fan. Says Undertaker's Moon is also great.
Yeah.
You know, when that came out with Zebra, it just kind of came and went. I mean, it was a werewolf book and it had, you know, Irish folklore and everything in it, but it just kind of came and went. And when I came back in 2006 after, you know, not writing for 10 years, that was the first book I put out. And it just, you know, it got a huge following, you know, the second time around. Yeah, of course, I changed the title back to Undertaker's Moon. Zebra always changed the titles. They,
right.
They, of course, they knew better. You know, they were, you know, just look at some of the books they put out. But, and it wasn't until like 2013, 2014 that Fear started coming back into the limelight. And, mm-hmm. and that a lot of that had to do with Nick, you know,
Spooky Noodles, yeah,
Spooky Noodles.
He's actually the one that sent me a copy to read. That's mm-hmm. I owe that to him, that he actually sent me the copy to read. So,
yeah, I think Nick a lot, you know, yeah. He kind of put Fear back on the map. So,
yeah,
I think that's Nick is truly your biggest fan.
That's so great, though. Like, look at the impact that somebody who loves a piece of art can have on it. That's mm-hmm. that's wonderful. That's
somebody who wasn't even born when I wrote it, you know. So
right.
Well, that's you know, weird, because I wrote it 30 about 31 32 years ago. So
so it just goes to show, it's never too late to pick up a book and read it. No. And talk about it. No, doesn't matter how old it is.
That's right. In my case, you know, you have to go way back to, you know, read a lot of my stuff. So that's why, you know, I've got a large, a large list of fiction over the years, and I'm still putting it out. I'm putting out short stories people hadn't read since, you know, 1986. You know? And mm-hmm. So I'm putting them into these little collections and stuff, and that kind of, you know, keeps it going for me. You know? And then I add a few new stories in. So,
right.
You know, when people, you know, I'm sure there's some people that, you know, read my stuff way back when it was in Cemetery Dance or mm-hmm. Death Realm or books like that. But a lot of people, you know, new readers are reading it for the first time, you know.
Yeah. That's cool that it gets rediscovered after so long for whole new generation and stuff. That's cool.
Mr. Glowbones, yeah.
When were you first published, like, your short stories and stuff, Ron?
First short story was in 1986, I think. 86. Yeah. It was a little magazine called Terror Time Again, and it was a story called Breakfast Serial, about a serial killer that sits down to to breakfast with this farm family. So I'm going to read, I'm putting out the... You know, my Haunt of Southern Fried Fear books, you know, uh-huh. my my kind of EC flavored horror. The next one's gonna be all serial killers and maniacs and mass murderers. So it's gonna have all
the fun stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, all my dark crime, you know, related stories.
This is what retirement does to you.
1986. 86, that's the year I was born. It makes you feel old.
Stop.
Make me feel old.
I was actually wondering whether, because I was born in like 82, and I just always remember like going to the library and I'd pull, you know, they were coded like anything that was any kind of horror story had a little ghost on the spine. And I would just go down the line and just pull off until I had a big stack. And it makes me wonder, like, because I read a bunch of short stories. I'm like, I wonder if I read yours when I was a lot younger. That would be cool. I'm going to assume that I did. That's my new headcanon.
Todd was a wee young lad back then.
Yes.
Everyone say their birthdays
now. Are we going through years now? Okay.
Jay was born in 1956.
You know, when I started reading horror, it was just like the old classics. It was like Frankenstein and Dracula and Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde and Lovecraft. Right. And that was about all the horror there was. I mean, I'm sure like Robert Bloch's Psycho was, you know, on the bookshelves and stuff like that. But I mostly gravitated to the spooky classics and stuff. And
yeah.
Then Stephen King came along when I was like in my early teens. I guess that really, you know, showed me that, you know, you could make a living. Of course, I thought you made a really good living, you know, writing horror, but that doesn't always work out, you know. not like Stephen King does, but, you know, but it just, you know, he made horror acceptable. I mean, it was, you know, not something that was like, you know, keep it away and all that, you know, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was also releasing one every week. So.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I wanted to ask, when you came back, Ron, to Crystal Lake, about y'all want to do an Appalachian horror? Were they just down from the beginning with that, or did they like, let's do something else? Or
no, Joe was right on. You know, he said, yeah, that's perfect. You know, because you know, when he invites certain writers to start putting these together, they, you know, he's looking at their individual, you know, subgenres that they write in and you know what they're really good at. You know, I'm like, you know, the one that just came out with the Candace and Daniel and Jasper, you know, was you know, extreme horror, you know. So you know, they're all very good in that subgenre. So I think he, you know, Joe keeps an eye on who's writing what and what they're good at. And you know, I think he knew I was going to pick something like in a Southern, you know, maybe Appalachian or Southern horror, you know, vein. So, you know.
Like, I really dig the whole series that they're doing with this Dark Tide, because you're getting three authors. It's a good way to discover someone new. I mean, we know all three of you, but say there's one where one person you know, but you don't know the other two, you know, but you pick it up, now you know the other two and their style and all. So what is this, number 13?
Number 13.
Yeah, ours is 13.
Yeah.
Lucky 13.
Yeah, I was going to say that fitting for...
I've seen that in some of the reviews, though, like, as particularly folks who are familiar with Ron's work. Yeah. And they'll say, you know, I picked this up because I like, you know, I love Ron Kelly's work and the, you know, these other two authors are unknown to me. So absolutely that, you know, it has an effect. I think.
I mean, no one, they haven't read Below yet. That's
what Jay's favorite character of all time.
Well, the thing is they know Mads, they don't know me. So okay. They're just like, they don't put it together.
Yeah. Just and a question for everybody, whoever wants to answer. Do you think there's anything that sets Appalachian horror apart from anything else other than just the location? Any other themes or anything like that that makes it feel Appalachian horror?
There's just something that feels maybe, and of course anybody in Europe would just laugh their butt off at this, you know, but yes. It feels old. It feels connected to something older. Maybe it's the cave systems or, you know, or something. I mean, obviously, as far as settlements go, we're about the same age as the rest of the country, as far as that goes. But it feels like there is something here that goes older, that goes a little bit deeper.
A little historic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, aren't they the oldest mountain range in the world? They are, aren't they? Okay. Or at least in the United States, I know they are.
It sounds good. I have no idea.
Yeah, I think so.
Let's see.
Well, they are very ancient. It's a very ancient mountain range.
We just said it on the internet.
That's why we don't have peaks like in the Rockies.
So,
yeah, so they used to be taller than the Rocky Mountains, but they've eroded down. Yeah,
they used to be huge. They used to be like the Himalayas.
Todd is saying it predates fossils. So
weathering eroded them down. Oldest, so they are very, oldest mountain range in the world. I don't know if they're the oldest. Okay.
Yeah. It says we're on the internet right now, and everything on the internet's true. So we're going to go with it.
If Todd Kiesling says it, you're
fine.
According to Penn State University, they're nearly 480 million years old, so older than the dinosaurs.
Mm.
So you're right, Laurel. They are very old. Ron, you were read. Is there anything that speaks, you know, this feels like Appalachia to you all when writing something? Or having a story set there?
No. I don't have anything to add. I don't have anything to add.
I used to read like Carl Edward Wagner and like mainly Wade Wellman, and it was always set in Appalachia and you know the mountains and stuff like that. So, you know, I read my share about the time that I started beginning writing short stories and stuff. So I guess that's kind of what piqued, you know, my direction as far as what I wanted to write, you know, and mm-hmm. of course I wanted to represent the South and everything. And so, yeah, you know, fiction like that, you know, is what got me interested in wanting to write about, you know, the mountains. And of course, you know, I write, you know, stories in all states of the South. You know, I'm particularly like to write like Cajun Louisiana horror. You know, I did a whole collection of that, the Tales from the Southern Fried Crypt. You know, had all swamp and bayou stories. So
like Laurel was talking about, I feel like each of your stories do have this ancient feel to them, whether it's mm-hmm. you know, Granny and the Netherwild, or you know, just however long the witches have been going back in your story, Laurel, and then Red's got the gather entity thing who's been there for who knows how long. So I feel like there is this feeling of, you know, this ancientness to all the stories, whether you all intended that or not.
Now the granny woman in my story in this one was a kind of a mixture of my two grandmothers. My maternal grandmother was a very sweet, kind, she was the storyteller, and my other grandmother was full of piss and vinegar. She liked to really stir stuff up. She liked to gossip a lot. And so, you know, I kind of combined the two and made this old mountain granny woman, you know, from that character, which was fun because I kind of took traits from both my grandmothers. Mm-hmm.
Ron, did you and Red, did y'all have fun creating the creatures in your all stories?
Oh, I did. I'm a creature person. So just, you know, just as they're going to the Netherwild and coming across creatures that, you know, that you don't actually see at certain times, mm-hmm. you know, they know they're there, but you know, like the granny woman tells them to not look up into the treetops.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, to look straight ahead. So.
What about you, Red? Did you like creating the gather?
I really liked doing. the gather was really fun to write. I took some, and I feel like I'm just gonna spoil it if I say too much of where those ideas came from, but it came from some. I like to put a lot of parent-child trauma and dynamics in my stories. And I took a little bit from The Village, the movie The Village, M. Night Shyamalan. Okay. Took a little inspiration from that. Not intentionally at first, but as I was writing it, I was like, you know what that reminds me of?
when I can't remember the character's name, when he first thinks he sees it, you know, in the going through the trees or whatever, it made me think of the movie Antlers, and also Adam Neville's The Ritual, where it has a big, big horn thing.
The Ritual is a movie that actually scared me for the first time in a very long time. I haven't watched a horror movie that scared me in quite a while, and that one I watched a couple of years ago for the first time, and it creeped me out. It made me scared to go out to my car.
See, I find it hard for things to actually scare me. Like, I might jump at a jump scare, but like actually being scared of something, like, you know, being afraid to go out to the car or whatever, like, that's very rare for me.
That one got me. Like, it, because they had me on edge for most of the movie, and then I had to go pick up my kid somewhere, and it was dark, and I went out the car, and like, I don't know, I saw a shadow or something, and I'm like, freaking out. Like, it was really creepy.
Is that the book, the movie's the actual book too, or okay?
Yeah,
and I didn't know if it had the same name or just.
I think it's on. It was on Netflix, maybe. Yeah, I don't know where it's at now. But
I think it is.
Yeah.
And then Laurel, for you, you didn't really have any. You kind of had a creature in yours, but not like a monster kind of thing. But yours was more like almost apocalyptic in a way. Going on what happens towards the end. Did you intend it to kind of head that direction from the beginning? Or is that just natural progression as it went along?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I kind of knew that the element that was going to be at issue was, you know, kind of the balance of the land and how that would manifest. You know, because that energy kind of has to go somewhere. And yeah, you kind of, you got to sow and you have to reap as well. So, you know, I knew I wanted there to be some danger there, and I knew I wanted there to be sort of a coherent entity to an extent. But yeah.
I really like the thing at the end, like your just description of it was really cool. All the mud and stuff.
Thanks. Thanks. Yeah. This one was a little bit odd because I had several coworkers were like clamoring to be killed off. I don't know why. but, like, the office managing partner was like, why haven't you killed me in a book yet? And I was like, I can be arranged, you know, and then it just became a thing. So, yeah. So like none of them were
put actually in a request. That's
what they weren't based on the people. And I wasn't intending to do certain things with that one character, but I named her after one of my coworkers who's quite lovely. And then I kind of wanted to be like, so you're not actually wearing clothes in part of this. I just want you to be aware of that. And I'm sorry.
You're like, well, I guess I would love to kill my coworkers.
Well, then I kind of didn't think about it. Like, I let them know because they were like, well, you know, what's going on? And then they thought it was real funny because the guy that I made the sheriff, they thought was hysterical. And then then they found out that the book had come out and they were having their secretaries order. I was like, stop. No, you're not supposed to actually read this shit. Listen, no, I'm more comfortable with this thing where you guys are like, yeah, we don't really care for horror. Well done. Anyway, let's keep it at that level.
It's like a different side of Laurel that I didn't know about. So well, dark. Dark.
When my first, well, that would expect that. Like, I am literally no different in at work. But yeah, no, they, when Whispers in the Dark came out, they were telling people that that it was zombie porn. So they just kind of stuck with that kind of.
Zombie porn for Whispers
zombie in the porn.
They don't read it. That's just what they like to say. Oh, okay. I feel like
so there was misleading.
Why zombie porn?
I don't remember zombies in that one at all.
No, the guy who caused the most trouble like lives next to my mother-in-law anyway, so I think he's just like trolling on multiple levels. You know, I feel like he's probably like, "Hey, did you check out your daughter-in-law's zombie porn yet?"
You should totally do a zombie porn then, and just like,
well,
my popular request,
like, zombie porn in space.
Don't tell people that. Imagine how frustrated they are when they get to the end of it. There's no
zombie porn.
There's none at all.
It's such a letdown.
It's just
turn me on at all.
Yeah. One star.
Yeah.
I tried to write zombie porn once.
Do tell.
Did you slip? Did you slip the tip in? Sorry.
Okay. So it was back in 2015. I was trying to write something new, and it was going to be the zombie apocalypse, the sexy scene in the beginning.
Red totally it to wrote my friends, zombie porn.
And my friends read it, and they're like, oh, honey, this is not erotica. Like, it's a little romantic, but it's not erotica. I'm like, really? This is pretty.
She showed
saucy.
Her ankle. What are you talking about?
They're like, just stick to horror.
But if it's zombies... Don't like body parts fall off sometimes. Their boobs and nipples will fall off.
That wouldn't be my biggest concern, honestly.
Well, Candace had a question. What do you all consider the most fun part of the writing process to get us back on track from
Thank
the
you,
tip Candace. And boobs and nipples?
What did she ask that? Like three
it's
hours
been,
ago?
It's been a couple minutes. No, been a couple minutes.
I'm going to go back in the chat looking like I didn't. I just see a question.
Brad's like desperately typing.
I
know.
I don't have a favorite part. It's all my favorite at different times. So sometimes I hate editing, but sometimes I get really excited about editing because I know I'm making it better. And sometimes I really love the idea. And when I decide I'm going to write something, but I also hate that part because then I have to actually sit down and write it.
Do it.
So there's pros and cons to all of it, but I really enjoy every part of writing, but I also really hate every part of writing.
I love the moment when I realize what I'm really writing about. Either because I have a theme that I want to hit and I know sort of what I want to say, but I don't know how to get there. Or that I know that I want to write something in a certain vein, or I've got sort of like the bones of an idea, but I don't know what to do with it. And then all of a sudden it clicks with something that I really need to say or get across. That moment where you're like, whatever you're doing, you know, you're in the shower, you're cooking. I don't do that. Or, you know, any of those sorts of things. And you have to just sort of like stop what you're doing and go at least get down like the original parts of your thoughts so that you can come back to it. That, I mean, I love the act of writing when it's going well. I love it. I love, you know, flying across the page and I love all that sort of stuff. But that moment, that click is so, that's gotta be my favorite.
Red, this applies to you. I think I don't love to write. I love having written John Saul Clark.
in some ways, but I really do enjoy the creative process because I'm a creative at heart. So I mm-hmm. need to always be making something, whether that be stories or art or whatever. So I do love that part of it, but sometimes when it's hard and I can't figure out the storyline, it's hard to sit down and try to make it happen. But when it's going well, it's really fun.
Yeah. For those that don't know, Red's an amazing artist.
Oh yes.
Mm-hmm. I do. If you ever like are stuck on anything, do you like maybe try to artistically do it, like draw a picture of it or paint it or whatever, and that maybe get the juices flowing for the story? Do you ever do it backwards, kind of like that? Start with the picture first.
Not usually. Well, I do usually start with pictures because when I'm sketching out my plot or my ideas, it's not just words. It's always a random sheet of paper, and it's random phrases and ideas and pictures, and so it's okay. A little bit of everything. It's some sketching and doodling. That's where it all starts.
What about you, Ronald? What's your favorite part? To go back,
you know,
to
when I was working, and I worked in factories and blue collar jobs for 40 years, you know, different types of work. And, you know, sometimes it can be a very mundane, you know, monotonous process. And I would brainstorm, you know, story ideas and dialogue and everything like that. And it, you know, it got me excited, you know, because when I would get home, I would be so fired up and, you know, stimulated that I would sit down and write. Yeah, now that I'm retired, then I just sit here and go, come on, let's do it. So, Yo, like Joe Lansdale told me years ago, if you want to be a writer, dig a ditch. Because, you know, just being like, I'm sure Laurel, being, you know, having being in the legal profession and stuff like that, you know, it's not like, you know, me on a assembly line or something like that, doing the same thing over and over again. She does a lot of mental work, and you know, so, you know, I always had this, like, you know, little bits of, you know, ideas and stuff, and I would come home with a, you know, little slips of paper in my wallet and everything, and mm-hmm. and I'd lay them out and start writing when I got home. But but you know, right now, you know, I get a lot of pleasure from editing and polishing, you know, my work when, you know, I'm going over the print edition of Deadeye now, and kind of fine tuning the dialogue and you know, just getting the kinks out and everything, and that's, you know, that's very satisfying when you do that and getting it ready for publication, you know. So
mm-hmm. I'm surprised none of you said when you're done and you get to come on to shows like this and talk about it. But
that's, it's fine. It's fine.
No, that's such an easy answer, though. That's the one everyone says, Jay, and we wanted to be different.
I know. Okay. I appreciate that.
They're all like, this is the worst part. I hate this. Please, can this be over?
Jay contacted us again. Shit.
New Twitter.
So, yeah. Ron, I'm sure you will, but Laurel or Red, do you think you'll ever venture into Appalachian horror stuff again in the future? Did y'all have fun enough writing your stories that might come back again?
Yeah, I think so. Given the right idea. Yeah. Cause it's, you know, I love Supernatural. That's always going to be the place that I like to go back and touch. And, I think given the right idea, like delving back into that, I think there's a whole lot there.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for coming, Candace.
Yeah. I've done some stories set in the mountains. I don't know if they'd be considered Appalachian horror, but I've done some short stories, and then my most recent novella has a little stint in the mountains. So yeah, I love the mountains. I think when I was a kid, I used to dream about living there. I thought I'd grow up and be this lone woman with a golden retriever living in the mountains.
Yeah,
like, up on this road that couldn't be plowed, and like, that's what I pictured my life. I thought I'd just live all alone with a dog up on a mountain that nobody could get to. So I could see myself writing more Appalachian horror.
Nice.
I'm actually considering my character Uriah Code Creek. I'm actually considering writing a collection of stories based on his, like, his adventures.
And that'd be nice. Yeah.
Well, the Seventh Son Chronicles. So, you know, I may kind of extend his storyline. I've got this idea, and I may have Todd Kieslin help me with the book design, where it starts with like his birth in the front of a Bible and mm-hmm. ends with his death on the death page of the Bible, you know.
Oh,
okay.
And in between,
it's like, you know, it's just kind of like journal pages, kind of.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be cool.
So, you know, I may have to talk to Todd, you know, when I see him at AuthorCon, see what we could do about that. It may be a while in the future, but because I got so many projects I'm right now.
Yeah, that's definitely a character that you could write a lot of stories about, just all his adventures and stuff he's doing up there.
Well, start getting back up at 3:30 and you can get it done.
No, I don't think so.
I was going to say, you could buddy write with Jay. You could get up at 3:30.
So real quick, as we wind down, can you each sort of just give a brief description of kind of what your story's about, other than just Bourbon Witches, Laurel?
Oh, try to get the glare off here while you talk.
All right, Ron, do you want to start, since you're first?
Yeah, Ron, what?
Mine's A Foot in the Netherwild. It's about two children that go missing in the mountains, and their father enlists the help of a seventh son and purveyor of mountain magic, Uriah Cold Creek. And so they go on this quest to try to locate and rescue these children from a being who's known as the coveter, who mm-hmm. takes the mountain's children for its own selfish needs. So.
And Laurel, you're next. What's yours about?
So it is, it's about, it's called Spirit Coven, and it's, you know, there I go with the bourbon puns already. And it's just a coven kind of witches who are in, Eastern Kentucky in the mountains, and it's during Prohibition, and they have their own distilling methods, and they have long made this bourbon, and they also infuse it a lot with certain sort of remedies, sort of folk remedy kind of things from the mountains. And so they've had this, you know, kind of symbiotic relationship with the people below. They kind of caretake them, but things start going bad. People start going missing and dying, and these the land starts changing, and so the tide turns, and they start getting blamed for things, and they have to kind of deal with that and deal with what's going on with the magic of the mountain.
Is it true that their distillery originally became Buffalo Trace? I just
yeah, that's a trade secret and not allowed.
I just let it out. Shit, I just let it out.
Well, you know,
we can edit that part out, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a live broadcast, man. I don't know.
Ah, geez, we do it live without a net. Red, what's going on with your story?
I don't remember. I wrote it too long ago.
It's been over a month. I don't know.
So mine is set during toward the end of Vietnam War, and it's a high school graduate who still lives at home with mom. His brother's away at Vietnam, and they live really close to this area of the mountain where they're really not allowed to venture because bad things happen. There's this place called the Devil's Bathtub where if you dip your toe in, you get too close to the devil, so the locals say. And so strange things start happening. People start disappearing. People go to the bathtub and come back and their minds aren't right and they're kind of out of it. And so Martin is just struggling with trying to figure out what is happening to the people in this town because he's more science minded and he wants to figure it out. And meanwhile, he's worried whether or not his brother is still alive and he's taking care of everybody in the holler. And I'm really botching this description. I should have just read it off the back. Should have just read it off the back of the thing. All right.
Back here.
And yeah. More people fall victim to the water's summoning darkness. And Martin struggles to make sense of it all, determined to hold on to life's fraying reality.
And scene.
So is that your favorite part, writing the synopsis for it? That's going to be the best part?
Of course. Oh, my God.
Sometimes I think everyone we've ever talked to.
I haven't even written yet.
Yeah. Everyone we've talked to, they're like, I hate writing the synopsis. It's terrible.
So bad.
That and writing blurbs. Blurbs are blurbs. Hard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The generic blurbs. It was amazing.
A tour de force.
Yes.
The Devil's Backbone, Appalachian Horror. So this is book number 13 in the Dark Tide book series from Crystal Lake. It's out now, right? Obviously, I got it in my hands. I
think it's
it.
Out now. It's hey, out what now. A stupid question.
Oh, I've already had two glasses, too, of Tennessee whiskey.
Jay, you've done so good, and you have to muck it up right at the end.
Is it out yet?
I had to go out with a bang, right? So we can't thank you guys enough to wanting to stop by and chat with us. Well, I mean, Laurel lives here. She's a member of the true. Show.
You can't Laurel, get rid of me. Sometimes I'm just Shirley in your living room.
Shirley needs a book recommendation of yours. Where should Shirley start with Laurel Hightower?
Just go for it, Jay. You tell her. What should you read? Yeah. Thank you, Shirley.
Because all of her stuff's great, and I'm not just saying that because she's here. All of her stuff's great, but I have a special spot in my heart for Below.
Shirley, you would like
I can't reach
Whispers
it.
In the Dark. I think you'd like
Whispers in the Dark
really
is good.
Like Whispers
you can read that
dark.
After Below.
Jay wants you to read Below.
Yeah. There's a character Mads who may or may not look familiar.
Now, we all three of us will be at AuthorCon, and we will all have copies of
awesome.
The book. So, you know, if you come to AuthorCon and you buy a copy, you got all three of us at one event to sign it. So that's going to be a rare thing. So
Yeah, and it's pretty cool. It doesn't matter who you buy it from.
No, it doesn't.
And you're just...
Yeah, that they'll just fight in the parking lot. Buy it for me. There you go. You have to buy 3 copies. Yep.
Yeah. They refuse to sign together. That's what it is. 3 copies.
That's right.
I can't send that one. Ron did it. I got to sign my own.
Really. He took my spot. Red Legault, Laurel Hightower, and Ronald Kelly, thanks so much. We appreciate you guys wanting to stop by and chatting with us. Everyone in the chat, thanks for stopping by and enjoying yourselves. We know you did because. Yeah, three legends here with us. That's it, right? I mean, what else you want to add, Brad? You know they had fun in the chat.
That's it. I hope so.
All right. And hopefully they all come back.
I think they just laughed at the at the sex jokes is what they laughed at.
Yeah, the boobs and nipples. Do we have a
boobs and nipples? And,
yeah.
And tips. And the tips.
So
the tips.
The three of you need to do this yearly and then come back, okay? So think about the next theme for the next one.
I'm sorry, I just died a little inside because it took me so long.
Because you have no other projects going on, right? So
I just I had a hard time. I don't know what the deal was. I kept hitting the wall on it. Like, and again, like Ron and Red were so gracious while I like just kept extending that deadline like Taffy. It just never ended.
You could do it. You could do it. All right.
Ron's like, next time. Ron's like, I'm not inviting Laurel next time.
Ron's not going to contact us next time. He's going to be like, screw that. So,
thank you guys for having us.
Everyone, thanks so much. We appreciate it. Until next time. Glad you got to see me.
Love you, Jay.